Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm very happy and lucky to have on the show Dennis Cooper, whose newest book of stories is called Ugly Man. It's published in a paperback original edition by Harper Perennial. This is one of Dennis's rare visits from Paris, where he is now living, or at least two rare visits from Paris. And it's, to my mind, a very interesting book in that all of the things that once stopped people short about your writing, its violence, its ease with extreme forms of sexuality, its narrative invention verging on the creation of a labyrinth without walls, somehow or other, in all these pieces, no sooner do you respond one way, then there's like a shock or a short circuit, and something humorous will come up, and although you may start to laugh, that doesn't become a dominant tone either. It, almost as if the style is about constantly pulling the rug out from under itself and under the reader.
That's my intention. Yeah, I wanted to work with the comedic, you know, and in a really present and really heavily forefronted way. But I wanted to, you know, I'm not used to working with a dominant tone. It's not something I've done before, but it was something I just wanted to experiment with, because I'd always wanted to write a comedy novel, and I'd wanted to write a novel that was the equivalent of a Jacques Tati movie, but I could never do it. So I employed this kind of like comedic build, or the build of a joke, or the build of a routine or something. But I wanted it to, yeah, I mean, I wanted it to be kind of, you know, I didn't want it to be to be static. I wanted it to be in motion in some way. I wanted it to be the kind of currents in it and stuff like that. So yeah, I tried the best I could within this kind of like shallow kind of area that comedy allows you to work in, without, you know, the comedy dropping away, to just try to, you know, wire it as complicatedly as possible and get trip people up and do all those little things.
There's such a smooth tone, you know, there really is a roué quality here, you know, a seen it all, not in the jaded sense of your teenagers, but a more twinkling sense, like Maurice Chevalier when he appears in certain kinds of romantic comedies, that is very disconcerting. You know, it's sort of like a very brilliant kind of vaudevillian strut that runs through these pieces. You know, here we are in the infinite streets and nothing perturbs our glance, you know?
Yeah, thank you. That was what Maurice Chevalier. I am living in Paris, so I mean that was the only way I could make it work. I mean, I had to be smooth. It had to be really, really, really smooth and just really, really pristine but have this kind of like sensuality, you know, weird, very strange sort of sensuality in the prose, and a kind of a prettiness, and you know, that would I don't know, negate the crassness of humor or something, of the humor or something. I don't know. It was complicated. It was really hard to figure out, but I smooth is good.
So. Well, you've spoken of your prose as being composed of different systems, right, that sometimes meet and sometimes are held apart from one another? What is a system in that sense?
Well, it's just a matter of like, it's a matter of just subdividing every element of the of what I'm working on that I want to be active and I want to be, you know, functioning or whatever, successful or whatever, into a kind of a plane or something, you know, or a kind of a grid or a kind of, you know, structure. And I don't know, just system is this the most, when I think of it as a system, it helps me because it's a structure, but it's also active and full of electricity and things. So it's, you know, so, yeah. So, I mean, there's like comedies, you know, like, so like different tones are like systems, right? So there's like, you know, the comedic tone, there's this disturbing tone or whatever, different things like that. And then they have to, and that's just taking, kind of creating a plane of each one and then, you know, trying to make them intersect in such a way that they each function simultaneously, but that, you know, some cut out and some don't. And it's a little, it's also kind of like mixing music, you know, I think about it that way. It's like mixing, you know, like the vocal track, low or high or medium, and the rhythm and the different, and the kind of production values and things. So I think about it, those sort of both of those things at the same time. And it just makes it more, it makes it all seem, feel organic to me or something, you know, rather than like, you know, trying to put these pieces together. It's, you know, they're layered and they're blurred together, they're blended together, and it's partially about blending them, you know, so you can't see the different systems, you know, unless you're, you know, reading it in a very careful literary way, you know.
What you're saying makes me think of the kinds of things that Roland Barthes was writing about. It occurred to me that a lot of your prose could not have taken the form it took if it were not for the new novel and theory's response to the new novel. Roland Barthes was the first celebrator, right, of Robbe-Grillet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so much in the way of parsing codes, mm-hmm, that your work does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, I'm sure that, I mean, certainly it's true about the Nouveau Roman. I mean, that was like a, finding them was, I found them just before I started Closer, my first novel, and that was like this real revelation for me. I mean, I already had this kind of idea in place that was, you know, kind of like a combination of Bresson and Sade and different things that were sort of odd combinations of artists that I was interested in, but that was true. And then, yeah, it's true reading about it and Robbe-Grillet's own writings about it. And then Barthes, of course. And then to me, like the things that came out of that, like Blanchot was the most helpful to me. You know, that's where I got, I think, the most, but certainly Roland Barthes. Actually, Empire of Signs is the one where it's the clearest to me. That's, for some reason, that's like an odd little book. But the way he talks about, when he talks about Japanese culture, it's like, and he divorces it from writing about literature. I get it so much. I really get it there. But yeah. I mean, I my debt to that stuff is immense. You know.
Well, because one of the things that I noticed is that on account of that reading of systems or codes, mm-hmm, the criticism that comes from theory rarely involves a notion of the unconscious.
Right.
The unconscious is kind of on the surface, or somehow something has been achieved that lets the unconscious not be buried.
Right.
And then I realized that there was an American romance with the unconscious. That is to say, that Poe, who's very much like these writers, has been accounted for around 50 years as if he were the prince of the unconscious, making his way onto the surface of the world and, all of the House of Usher, incest, Berenice, vagina dentata, when in fact it's not that. In some crazy way at all, it's that Poe is taking an image too literal.
Mm.
It's not buried at all. It's so surface that one is arrested by it and one doesn't know what to do with it. You know, brother going down to basement to dig up his sister's corpse from the tomb, and, you know, and that seems to happen here too, that the what once would have been buried is now overlit.
Right. Yeah, yeah, that's true. I don't know if that comes from Poe. It's interesting. But, I wonder where it might come from music. But yeah, yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely, which is where a lot of confusion about my work comes in, you know, that it's naughty and crass and things. And they don't... yeah, that's always been a problem for me. If it surfaces that much, you know, if it rises above the liquid of the prose too much, and it always has to for me, it's like, you know, it's all that matters, you know, and it's all that is what one sees. And yeah, but and then you have to make these systems that complicate it so much that they, when they look at it, you hope that they somehow can see, like, you know, this is not a three-dimensional polished photograph of something. This is embedded in something, you know, and you can't escape it. You still can't get people to do that.
Well, but, you know, how to put it, most people treat what they think of as unconscious with denial, don't have access. Mm-hmm. And in maybe the first book of the George Miles cycle, which is a cycle that includes, where did it start?
Closer.
Closer, Frisk, Try, Guide, and Period. One might have still felt, oh, I'm going to read Dennis Cooper and find the hidden organizing principle that a psychoanalyst would look for. But instead, the prose seems to not want to or even be able to perpetrate denial or dishonesty. It's interest in a kind of pragmatic precision about the fallibility both of the narrator and of the characters,
yeah,
seem to make it impossible to hide anything.
That's why I ended up using that. But you're right that it isn't really a choice. So I don't know. I mean, I just, yeah, it just seemed like the only you know, surface that would be transparent and opaque at the same time in a certain way I wanted to, but and because, you know, and to represent my confusion, I mean, you know, because it's just my work seems to me to be always about confusion, so and there was a kind of a pragmatism seemed like the right way to go, and then pragmatism, you know, well, whatever, in the form that it's ended up taking, you know. I had to invent these forms for it, so. Not in this, but.
But you were in psychoanalysis, I believe, for a while.
Therapy.
Did it bring you anywhere?
It sure did, yeah. It did. It did. Certainly it is a person, and I assume that can, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it did. It was huge. It was huge, so. And it did, yeah, because, I mean, I was always pretty good at, like, in writing or in constructing art or something, to analyze everything and balance everything and analyze everything in such a way that I could construct this thing I wanted to do. But it wasn't so true in my life, and so I think that the therapy really it helped me. I mean, you know, because I think you've been in therapy too.
Yes,
that's not cool to say. You know, I mean, it's all about narrative. You know, it's like, you know, finding these narratives and things, and the linear, finding the linear and stuff. And I found that just fascinating. And it's strange how it really worked, because I'm sort of anti-narrative, so it's really weird that finding this narrative actually did solve the problem for me to some degree. So, but yeah, and then it impacted my work in some way or other, I think. I mean, Try was like the kind of last book before I went into therapy, and that's like my most sort of emotionally out of control.
It seemed as if it took the anguish out and put something more settled, you know, like,
yeah,
if anguish is indecisive,
yeah,
some kind of finality of despair, but one that didn't trouble, that one accepted that at the bottom despair may be inevitable and as far as one can get, simply a fact of the human condition.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's all about organization. You know, it's all just about how you organize it. So,
I'm speaking with Dennis Cooper, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. Dennis is the author, most recently, of Ugly Man, published by HarperCollins. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Dennis Cooper about his new book, Ugly Man. You know, recently, after the death, the suicide of David Foster Wallace, well, first of all, I was thinking that probably no death in our literature, perhaps since the death, probably suicide of Hemingway, has had so much resonance, and that David Foster Wallace has become a kind of iconic figure, sort of the god of the intelligent young person, the young person still striving for some kind of humanistic empathy. And it began to occur to me that right now, the writers who have that kind of pull with young people have an iconic status. You, as the kind of god figure to lost, gay, addicted youth, and also to a certain kind of young artist figure. Dave Eggers, to some extent, a kind of world of yuppie ingenuity. You know, how do we take the money from the book and put it into the publishing house forming a cycle of party systems that lead to the making of a movie and the biography, you know, this, the American ingenuity, God. And I wondered, do you feel now that an author needs to present an iconic figure? It's almost outside the work in order to gain or rule an audience.
Ooh, good question. I mean, I do all that, the kind of stuff that I do that has made me kind of like a, I don't know, that brings people to me, like on my blog, I guess, which is where the most obvious place of it is. It's just pure instinct, you know. I mean, I organize my responses and I organize my dealings with people, you know, in terms of like tone and language and stuff. But it's really just, I don't know. I mean, I know what you mean, but I'm such an uncalculating person, really. And, my whole thing is like, I guess the only way I think about it is like, if I'm thinking about a kind of, conscious, you know, thing, is counteracting what the work represents. Just, I mean, the idea is like the work is very dark and the work is disturbing, the work is whatever it is. But that, you know, I am sane, you know, and I am like kind and I am, you know, interested and supportive and encouraging and stuff. Because I guess the only way that's not, because I see, you know, because a lot of people that are interested in me feel very isolated and troubled and by their thoughts or by people around them and stuff. And so my whole thing is just like, yeah, you can, my whole thing is just, you know, you should be absolutely original and you should be as experimental and, you know, and daring as you possibly can. And it's not going to make you go crazy. It's going to, you know, it can make you become, I don't know, you know, happy, or I don't know, something stupid.
Liberated.
Like liberated or whatever, yeah. And, you know, and then I'm also, you know, I'm an anarchist, so I have this whole thing about power and, you know, dispersing power as soon as you get it and stuff. So, but there's not a, I don't know if, I'm sure David didn't, Lost or Wallace didn't think of himself as an icon at all. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, and it's different. I mean, when he died, there's just been this tremendous outpouring of grief and respect for him that I certainly had no idea was so pervasive. I mean, every young writer I like or respect or am interested in suddenly revealed themselves as being, you know, overwhelmed with grief and how incredibly important his work was to them.
For people who are interested, how do they find the website?
The blog is...
The blog, yes.
It's just dennis.theweaklings.blogspot.com. It's on the back of the book.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I thought it would be interesting to read and then talk a little bit about the title piece in the new collection, which is Ugly Man. And what I want, what I'd like listeners to do is to examine the way the piece, which is very brief, shuts out any immediate responsiveness you might have to it, and then ends before you get a chance to register an objection. This is Dennis Cooper reading Ugly Man.
2 months ago, I found out I have a serious disease that's so rare it hasn't earned one of those nicknames like the flu. Even if I could pronounce its very long Latin name, the words would mean nothing. All you need to know is I'm being eaten alive by infections and I'll be dead within 3 months if I'm lucky. The worst side effect is a gradual, total destruction of my skin. It peels and flakes away in sheets. If I didn't spend half of my days in a tanning salon, I'd look like the moon. I'd have itched myself to death by now if my fingers weren't swollen into very painful, misshapen knobs. When I was first diagnosed, my boyfriend said it didn't matter. But when there weren't enough porn DVDs in the world or a big enough increase in his allowance to give him an erection when we were in the same room, I cut him a final check and sent him on his way. Now I buy prostitutes instead. It's obvious as soon as I undress they'll take no pleasure earning money from me, but they need the money, just like I need to rub my husk against them. That's why it's hard for me to talk about the fact that my disease is so contagious a little peck on the cheek is almost enough to guarantee transmission. In a few weeks, all the prostitutes I've hired will be the last boys on earth whom anyone would pay. Not long after I'm dead, they'll be dead. Some nights I fantasize about telling them what saints they are, but I don't. Still, there are times when I almost get the feeling they know.
Dennis Cooper, reading Ugly Man, the title piece in his new collection of stories from Harper Perennial. Now, kind of amazing, because the first thing that people who don't read very carefully like to do is say, oh, how could we be asked to read the account of someone whose thoughts and behavior are so immoral and so ugly? And so as soon as the piece ends, the reader goes, oh yeah, Ugly Man. Mm. Yeah. Don't get to annihilate this on account of an assumption that the author holds this narrator to be somehow acceptable. You know, we're starting from beyond the point of judgment, or the judgment has already been made.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. I mean, initially, Ugly Man seems as though it describes his skin condition. But.
And it wouldn't be the speaker, the narrator, who would have called himself or the piece Ugly Man. It's the writer,
yeah,
who's given it this title.
Yeah. No, the man wouldn't, and neither would the boys either. So.
Right. And somehow or other, buried here is a secret that this man holds, that he's telling the reader, who thereby becomes complicit in the secret, so that there is something he doesn't tell anyone that he's telling us. Is this part of the way this is constructed?
Sure, of course. Sure.
And then we're led to think at a certain part in the story about AIDS, something that we've, whatever age we are, if we're reading this, we've probably got some reference point of some kind to something that was infectious enough to be knowingly spread.
Well, and unsafe sex, too.
Unsafe sex. Yeah. Secretive unsafe sex.
Well, and consent, the consensual, what does the consensual mean and all that stuff, you know? What factors create consensuality and stuff.
Exactly. And for you, is that consensuality between the writer and reader as well?
Sure, of course. Yeah, sure, of course. I mean, yeah, I mean, the piece is the ugly, I mean, the text is the ugly man as well. It's like, it's I mean, it's constantly like shifting, it's very manipulative, and it's constantly shifting its approach very slightly to the reader and playing with the reader. You know, from there's comedy, there's narrative, there's like all kinds of twisty things going on there. So, you know, the text is the ugly is the ugly text of the ugly man, and the reader is the boys. You know,
I've been talking with Dennis Cooper, author most recently of Ugly Man, a book of stories published by HarperCollins. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with the click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Through the pages, books will take you through the ages, back to days of old when knights were bold, and books,
books, books, books, books, books, books can be funny too.
Books make you laugh and sing, books tell you everything, they're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. The jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.